Soma Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Well, welcome to all of you. It's nice to see you here today. And I've also been asked to talk about the picture that we see here on the board, which is kind of a map of everything. And this is according to the various scriptures, an explanation of the universe that we live in and beyond the universe. So it's important to know this because we need some orientation. When you go to the mall, you look for the map. At least I do, to know where I am. And on the map, they usually have a little red dot or an arrow, and it says three words.
You are here.
Correct. Now, if some little rascal takes that dot or arrow off, and there's no indication where you are, there's just a map, then you might be in a lot of anxiety because you're not sure where you're starting from, right? It's hard to find where you're going to progress to if you don't know where you are. So not only do we need a map, we like to also know where we are on the map. This, you'll notice, has two circular patterns, one protruding downward and one protruding upward. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, in the 15th chapter, gives a description of the material and spiritual worlds together. Urdhvam bulamadashakam ashvatam prahur avyayam chadamsi yasiparnani yasam deva sadevavid. That he says that the material world is like a banyan tree and it has its roots upwards and its branches down and its leaves are the Vedic hymns. Adashchorvam prashitastasishaka guna pravida vishaya pravala adascha mulana nusantatani karmanu bandini manusha loke. And then he describes the different aspects of the leaves and the twigs on the tree. And then he says, narupamasye hatato palabhyate nanto nacharina nachasam pratishta ashvaramenam suvaruda mulam basanga shastrena jidhena chitva. So, narupam, we can't, from our perspective, where we are right here in Tokyo, see the form of the entire tree. So imagine that the whole material world that we're living in, which is vast, if you look out at the sky at night, you can't even see a fraction of the universe we live in, and it's very difficult to imagine what's beyond what we see. In fact, for years, philosophers and scientists have been probing, both with their intelligence and with scientific instruments, to see beyond the current or the very immediate atmosphere that we live in, to try to understand where the end of the universe is. And there have been many theories over many, many years put forward by philosophers and scientists and so forth. And Krishna says, narupam, you can't see its form, because it's too vast. Narupam asyeha tato palabhyate nanto nachadira nachasam pratishta. You can't see where it begins or where it ends. Narupam asyeha tato palabhyate nanto nachadira nachasam pratishta ashvatameiram suvarudamulam. So he calls it an ashvata tree, means the banyan. And that fact that it's a tree means that it does come and go. The material world comes and goes. Trees sometimes there, sometimes not there. This is the nature of the material world. Krishna describes in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that bhutva grama sa eva yam bhutva bhutva praliyate ragame praliyante tatraivatya prasamjike. That sometimes the material world, which we see in the lower half, is manifested and sometimes it's unmanifested. Means it's created and annihilated over and over again. And this happens in cycles. They're natural cycles that during which the universe is created and annihilated, and they have to do with the daytime and the nighttime of Brahma, who's the first created being in the universe. And they also have to do with the end of the life of Brahma. So during the daytime, Brahma creates most of the universe, and at nighttime, most of the universe is annihilated. So his days and nights are a little longer than ours. They last for billions of years. And his lifetime lasts for 411 trillion years altogether. And all of that, that means the life of Brahma takes place within the exhalation of Mahavishnu, who's the source of all the energy of the material world. And that's described in the Brahma Samhita. Yasyaika nishvasita kalamata balamya jivanti loma vilaja jagananata Vishnur mahansa iha yasya kalabhishesho govindamari purushantam aham bhajami. Mahavishnu, the gigantic form of Mahavishnu, lies on the causal ocean, which is the water demarcating between the material and spiritual worlds, and he exhales, and when he does, out come the myriad universes, and all the universes then float on the gigantic causal ocean. And that takes place during his exhalation, that is, Brahma is born in each one of the universes from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then from the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he expands himself into Shiradakshay Vishnu, enters within every atom and within the heart of every living entity. This is also described in the Brahma Samhita. Ekopya saura charitam jagaranda kotim yach shakti rasti jagaranda chayayananta andanta rasta paramanu chayanta rastam govindamari purushantam ambajami. That is, Krishna is present in his completeness in every atom within the universe, and he's there within the heart of every living being. So when Mahavishnu inhales again, then the whole cosmic manifestation, which we see in the lower half, is then wound back up in the body of Mahavishnu. And the living entities, the conscious living entities, like us, are again suspended in a kind of non-dreaming sleep, which is called susupti. And we're held within the body of Mahavishnu for millions and millions of years until he exhales again. And then the whole show starts over again. So basically, Mahavishnu, in his breathing, in cycles of his breathing, God's breathing, is creating and annihilating the material worlds over and over again. And, of course, this Mahavishnu is described as in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, a Shastra, which is describing the various categories of the avatars and incarnations of the Lord, as a partial expansion of Krishna Govinda, because Krishna is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ete chamsha kala pumsam, krishnastu bhagavan swayam, indrari vyakulam lokam indriyani yuge yuge. And that is that the original cause of everything is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the Supreme Controller and the cause of all other causes. And from him, his first expansion is Balaram. And from Balaram comes Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. And then comes Mahasankarshan, and then another expansion, which is called the second expansion of the Chaturvyuha, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Vasudev, and Sankarshan. And from them manifest the three Purushas, who are responsible for maintaining the Srishti Lila, and that Srishti means creation, obviously, so that means their expansions of the expansion of the expansion of the expansions of Krishna, and they manifest and then maintain the entire material creation. And so Krishna is only indirectly involved with the material world, not directly involved. And now, in the verse I quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, this is a banyan tree, You can't see its form. You can't see where it begins or where it ends. He says, Asanga Shastrena Jardena Chitva. You must cut down this tree with the strong weapon of detachment. And so this is yoga. This is the process of spiritual life, actually, to become disentangled from the tree. But Krishna says a shocking thing. He says, this tree is a deeply rooted tree, but you must cut it down. Those who are serious about extricating themselves from the process of birth and death in this material world have to actually cut the tree down. Asanga, it means through the process of non-attachment. Actually, we have nothing to do with this material world, surprisingly. The Vedas say, Asango hyayam purushaha, that we have no sangha with this material world. We have no real connection. The only connection I have with the material world is my own attachment to it. But other than that, I have no real relationship with the material world because I'm non-material. The consciousness is me, and it is categorically different from the material world, which is categorized as earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And these gross and subtle elements make up what we see here, these bodies that we're sitting in, and all the other forms we see in this material world, but we're categorically different from those things. Krishna says it in the Gita, Apariyamatastanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhuta mahabahoya yedam daryade jagat. Besides these material elements I've just named, Krishna says, there's a superior energy, which is the soul. And the soul is animating the body, but you have nothing to do with it, actually, except for your attachment to it. So asanga, you must, through what is called sambandha gyan, and that's what we're discussing today, knowledge of our relationship with the spiritual world, our actual home, and with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we must give up our lower attachment and transfer it to that same attachment to Krishna. And then Krishna says, after cutting down the tree, asanga shastrena jritena chitva tatathara tat parimagritavyam yasminyata ga parivartitanta, that you must then search out that place from which you, from where everything is emanating, and find that Supreme Personality of Godhead and there surrender to Him. So that's the goal. Good to know the goal, right? So now, I'm going to continue, but I just want to see if there are any comments or questions so far. Any comments at all? Like, this doesn't make sense. How do you know what you're talking, what you think you're talking about? Anything at all? What are your comments? I'd be interested to know. Comments and questions mean relationship. Without comments and questions, where's the relationship? Anything that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind? Where's the microphone? My classes are usually interactive. It takes a few minutes to get used to, I know. What have you heard so far that's stuck in your mind? Any one thing?
For me, it's like...
Where's the microphone? She needs it right over there. What is your name?
I'm Neetu.
Neetu?
Neetu.
Thank you, Neetu.
You said that this comes, the whole universe comes from the breath, and we go inside from inside. And he is taking breath inside. I just want to know that is there any shape of that Lord?
Yeah, there's a shape of the Lord. He has let's see, there's on the picture here, Mahavishnu. You'll see, this is the Karna Ocean, and you can see Mahavishnu lying on the ocean here. He has four arms. He has the disc, the club, the lotus, and he's resting on a Sheshanaga. Sheshanaga is a snake form of the Lord. So it's a very grand, gigantic form of the Supreme Personality of God. And then, so he's the Mahapurush. These descriptions of his form, what he looks like, is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Especially, there's a chapter which describes how Krishna took Arjuna to see Mahavishnu. He came from this universe, and he came through the Brahmajyoti all the way to see Mahavishnu. Because, anyway, it's a long story. But Mahavishnu arranged because he wanted to see Krishna. What else did you hear so far? Or stuck in your mind? Two more comments. Yes. Your name is?
Rosanna.
Rosanna?
Rosanna.
Rosanna. Okay.
Actually, I want to know how the material world we are compared to the banyan tree.
Why is it compared to a banyan tree? Yeah. Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is, the reason it's compared to a tree at all is because a tree is reflected on a body of water like a lake. When you see a tree next to a lake, then you'll see the reflection of it on the lake, and it's upside down. So the real tree is in the spiritual world, but it's reflected into the three modes of material nature, which is the material world. And therefore, it's upside down. You get an upside down tree. Everything's opposite in the material world. And also, because a banyan tree is very convoluted, it has many, if you've noticed the big banyan tree that you've seen, the roots are going upwards and downwards, and it's a very gigantic kind of a tree. So, this ashvata, which means not tomorrow. It means it won't be here tomorrow. It's here today, gone tomorrow. It keeps coming and going. Thank you. One more, since we're on a roll now. One thing that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind, or a question? And then we'll move on. Yeah.
You said we have to attach ourselves to the soul.
You are the soul,
yeah. But
you have to attach yourself to the spiritual world and to Krishna. Because now our tendency is to be attached to this material universe, and it's a changing, fleeting existence. Everything that we have, it slips through our fingers, just like in a dream. You think that you have just won the lottery and you're driving a solid gold car, and the next minute the car turns into a donkey cart and all your money's gone. That's a dreaming kind of state where everything floats away. This, when we're supposedly awake, we're also in a dreaming state as well. This kind of material existence that we have, this idea that I'm this body, this family is my family, this is my nation, and so forth. These are all dreamlike images that we're identifying with. But our real identity is as Krishna's servants, and we have a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. So go ahead.
No, so I just wanted to know that when we are associate ourselves with Krishna in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Like as you have, you know, we have different methods. But sometimes, you know, it is like, as I was saying yesterday also, it's like we forget that he's there and, you know, we panic or, you know, we sort of run away from responsibilities. So it's like, how do we constantly keep that in mind that, you know, he is there, he mm-hmm. is protecting us, and we are part of him.
In the beginning, it's by following the rules of the Shastra very carefully. And this is called Vaidhi Bhakti or Vidhi Bhakti, which means there are certain rules for following the process of bhakti, and they're given in the Nectar of Devotion. For instance, one should in the morning rise early and perform Mangal Arati. And also one should worship Tulsi Maharani. And then one should chant Hare Krishna mantra on beads. And there are other kinds of rules to follow in the process of bhakti, especially having to do with hearing and chanting. There are 9 processes of devotional service, and they begin with hearing and chanting. So hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna, chanting Krishna's names and so forth. In the beginning, we do these things sort of mechanically, in a sense, because we may not have a taste for them. We may get a little taste in the beginning, which we call like a free sample. But generally, because we're afflicted by the disease called avidya, or ignorance, we don't have a taste. So out of faith in the Shastra, we must continue to follow. And so Rupa Goswami gives an example that when you get jaundice, anybody ever had jaundice? Okay. Everything tastes very bitter. And one of the cures for jaundice is to take sugarcane juice. Now, sugarcane juice tastes terrible when you have jaundice, right? Did you try it? Yeah, it's like you want to throw up or something because it tastes so bitter, it tastes horrible. But you have to keep taking it anyway. So the doctor says, drink this every day. And you say, but doctor, it tastes terrible. He said, but keep drinking it and then you'll be able to taste the sweetness. So in the beginning, when we practice chanting, for instance, it may not taste so good. The mind may say, but I want to be on the internet, but I want to, you know, go out and do something else. I want to go shopping, or I want to anything but this, the mind says. This doesn't taste very good. So you have to trust the doctor. You have to have a spiritual master says that you follow it, that says, chant this number of rounds every day without fail. And you follow the spiritual master like you follow the doctor. When you go to the doctor, he may tell you something and you have no idea. But you trust he's got the diploma on the wall. He knows what he's talking about. 2 years ago, when I was in Govardhan, I go to Govardhan every year for the Kartik season and spend time hearing and chanting for the month. And I also walk around the Govardhan hill every day. And I had some rash on my foot. It just wouldn't go away. And that's not very good when you're in India. So the devotees at the ashram took me to the doctor. And the doctor didn't speak any English. And so the brahmacharis there tried to explain to him, you know, what I had, the rash, and he took a look at it. Then he wrote some prescription. I couldn't read what it said. Then I went to the pharmacist, and he didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Hindi. And I couldn't read the prescription, but I handed it to him. And then he gave me the pills. I couldn't read what was on the pills. But I trusted the fact that the brahmacharis knew this doctor, that the doctor was bona fide and so forth. And then I took the medicine and the disease went away. So in the beginning, I could barely understand anything about the process. I just understood, okay, I trust these devotees. They've gone to him before. It worked. He's a bona fide doctor. This is a real pharmacist. It's medicine. I take it. I was cured. Even though I didn't understand that much about it. So in the beginning, you have to take the hearing and chanting like medicine. And then gradually, as you're taking the medicine, you'll notice a change. At first, it's imperceptible. Sometimes when you're sick, you think, I'm always going to be sick. Maybe I'll just die. You ever felt like that? I just think, I'll be sick forever. And then you start taking the medicine, and then one day you think, well, maybe I'm getting a little bit better, but maybe it's just in my mind. But then the next day you say, no, I'm definitely getting a little better. And then pretty soon you actually feel that your health is coming back. And you, then you know, and then everyone looks at you and goes, you're getting better. You're really improving. So in spiritual life also, when we begin, we'll feel that it's maybe not distasteful, we're taking it like medicine, but we have to do it anyway. Gaman, you have to keep going and take that cure. And then as you do, gradually, the spiritual health will come back and you'll experience that for yourself. So this is called Vidhi Bhakti. And that Vidhi Bhakti turns into Raganuga or something spontaneous, where that you want to do it. And nobody could stop you now. You have a real taste for it. Your health is, spiritual health is coming back. You feel joyful. You want to chant. You're making plans how to chant more. You're making plans how to decorate the deity nicely and, you know, doing other kinds of service and increase your service and so forth. And then from there, it continues to grow and grow and grow into higher stages of devotional service, which never ends, actually. It always keeps improving. Spiritual life is dynamic. Very good. Nice questions and observations. So this is our cosmic map. Now we see in the material world, we're in the earthly planet. And the earth planet is in the middle. It's really exactly in the middle of the universe. And then there's lower planetary systems going down and upper planetary systems going up. And in the upper planetary systems, you have the heavenly planets. And then you also have planets that go all the way up to Brahmalok. That's where Brahma lives, at the very top of the universe. Because Brahma is the creator of the universe. He's what we call the secondary creator. Because actually, God creates everything. Brahma's not God. He's a jiva, just like we are. But he's empowered. Shastra says, if you follow perfectly the rules of the Varnashram for 100 births, then you're qualified to take birth as Brahma. So Brahma is really into refinement in the Vedic process. I mean, following the system of the Shastra very carefully is very difficult. There's so many rules, regulations. Don't do this, do that. So Brahma is called Vidhi. He's into the very refined rules and regulations and everything. And he's a very empowered living being. And he, as we said before, and as you know, he comes from the lotus, which is born from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Mahavishnu creates all these universes, and then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters within each individual universe. And there are unlimited universes. And each one of the universes has a series of shells around them. And the shells are they're described as earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and pradhan. And each one of these coverings of the universe is 10 times thicker than the one before it. But it's not that there's an actual crust of earth around the universe. When we say earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, there's a representative of those in a subtle form. And within each one of the coverings of each one of the universes, there's a presiding deity that lives within each one of the coverings and is the ruler of that particular realm. And there are living entities there. As Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvagataha, the soul, the living entity, lives everywhere. We're just walking down by the river and there's always huge fish jumping out of the water. They're like yogis. They can live underwater. They know the art. And there's living entities that live on the sun because they have fiery bodies. And just like we have earthly bodies, but they're mostly made of water. And the living entity can live anywhere. The body is adaptable to the external environment. So within each particular universe, there is a planet called Shwetadvip, an island, which is a transcendental planet or island within each individual universe. So you'll notice in the Bhagavatam that when Kamsa and all his demoniac kings were causing problems on the earth, the demigods became disturbed and they went to Brahma. And they told him, there's disturbances in this universe. We need your help. So then Brahma went to the shore of the Milk Ocean in Shwetadvip, which is within this universe, and he offered a prayer called the Purusha Shukta. How many of you know the Purusha Shukta? Nobody from South India? Who knows the Vishnu Sahasranam? From South India, right? John. So he goes there to the shore of the Milk Ocean, And he utters this Purusha Shukta and he prays to Krishna, and Krishna then gives a transmission within his heart that I'll be appearing soon in this world. And so each one of the universes has planetary systems going up and down. The Earth planet is right in the middle. And in the Gita, Krishna describes how living entities who perform this punya, that they accumulate punya through pious activities, they can elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. But then there's the super higher planetary systems where great rishis live. There's Tapolok. And in these realms, which are above even the heavenly planets, there's very great rishis who live for incredibly long periods of time. And there are very great accomplished yogis, like the four Kumaras. You've probably heard of Sanat, Sananda, Sanat Kumara. The four Kumaras, Chatusana, they live in the upper planetary systems. And they have amazing yogic powers and so forth. And then some devotees live actually on the planet of Brahma, the Satyaloka, which is the highest planetary system. And at the destruction of the universe, Brahma and those who are his devotees, they can enter into the Vaikuntha. They can go back to Godhead from there. Now, people who perform pious activities to be elevated above the earthly planet, the heavenly planets have much longer duration of life, much better facility for enjoyment than we do here. You don't have to work as hard like in Tokyo. It's actually very heavenly. Even on this planet, I mean, there's some places, you go to Hawaii or something like that, it's a nicer environment. Not that much nicer, but heavenly planets, thousands of times nicer. And the duration of life is incredibly long and so forth. And you can attain those realms by working in a certain way. And Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Shinye punye martya lokam vishantam evam tri dharmam anuprapana gata gata gama kama labante. That the people, they work very hard, they do this karma kanda, and they try to elevate themselves to a higher planetary system. But when they go there, then they use up their punya after some time, long period of time, but then they fall back down again to the earthly planet. They have to start over again. It's kind of like if any of you fly on the airlines, you ever get frequent flyer miles? They elevate you. They let you walk on a little red carpet onto the plane and go, yay, you're a premier executive. You know? And then you get on the plane and you get to sit in a little bigger seat. And they bring you your water in a glass rather than in a plastic cup and things like that. And you feel like, yeah, I'm really something, you know. And, but then after you use it up, then they say, all right, get back in the economy section. You know? So in the universe, this process is going on also. The people, they try to get elevate themselves to a higher position, but then they use up their punya, they fall back down again. And this is within the laws of karma, this is going over and over again. And then the lower planetary systems are for those who are impious. And there's a degraded section who live in the lower planetary systems. And there's darkness, not as much, you know, no contact with with Krishna and so forth as there are even in the higher planetary systems. There's a lot of descriptions and a lot of variety. It's not completely stereotyped. I'm just kind of giving a general overview of the planets, but much of this is described in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But even in some of the lower planetary systems, you have Upendra or Vamandev lives there, and with Bali Maharaj. So Krishna is present all over the universe in various places. But the idea is, throughout the universe, there's a hierarchy. The higher planetary systems, it's for pious living entities. The lower planetary systems are for those who are impious. And then you see at the bottom of the universe, there's Anantashesha, who's responsible for holding up the universes on his hoods. And then there's the coverings of the universe. Each universe has a covering. As I mentioned, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And just beyond the covering of the universe, there's what's called the viraja, or this ocean, or this neutral section There's no modes of material nature there. The material world is controlled by the three modes. Everything in the material world is controlled by karma and by the modes of nature. But when you go beyond the coverings of the universe, you get to this viraja, which is the neutral zone, and there's a river demarcating it, like an ocean, and that is beyond the three modes of material nature. And then you come to the Shivalok. Shiva is partway between the viraja and the Vaikuntha realm. And he takes care of living entities who aren't qualified to go to Vaikuntha or anywhere else. Vaishnavanam Mitashambhu, Lord Shiva is a great devotee of the Lord. And he takes these living entities as his devotees, who are mostly kind of ghostly haunted and not very qualified people, but because of them following Lord Shiva, they get some qualification. And then you come, that very white region in there is the Brahmalok, called the effulgence of the body of the Supreme Personality of God. That's an all-pervading effulgence, but especially there we notice it, that realm that is beyond the three modes of material nature, and which is where some living entities reside. This is the abode of liberation. Gopakumar visited this section when he was traveling all over the universe by the power of his mantra. And there, living entities merge into the effulgence of the Lord. Although we're individuals, that individual soul can actually merge and become one with the great effulgence of the Lord, which is made up of trillions and trillions of living entities. And then beyond that, we come to the Vaikuntha realm. And the Vaikuntha planets are innumerable, and each one of the Vaikuntha planets is presided over by an expansion of the Lord in a personal form. And he has devotees that live on the planet with him and worship him in a certain mood. And there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets, and above the Vaikuntha planets, you'll see Goloka Vrindavan. This is described in Brahma Samhita. Goloka namni nija damni chaleta tasya devi mahesha haridama suteshu teshu te te prabhavan chaya vihitascha yena govindamari purusham tamaham bhajani. Lowest of all is located Devi Dham. That's where we are. Devi Dham means it's presided over, this world's presided over by Durga. Durga means Durga Chadi, difficult to go. You ever notice it's hard to go anywhere in this world? It's hard to stay also. You can't stay and you can't go. And even if you try to travel from one country to the next, you have to have so much paraphernalia, passport, visa, and then they look at it, can you come? Wait a minute, maybe not. Plus you have to figure out what to bring. You have to have oxygen when you fly in the plane. It's a big endeavor to move in this world. Durga. Durga Chati means difficult to go. And Durga is keeping us here. She rides on a tiger, and she has 10 arms, and she holds the trident. And you know, this trident has the 3 prongs on the end. They represent the 3-fold miseries. Adiatmic, Adibhautik, Adidaivik, Klesh. So these Klesh, or miseries, they're miseries that come from my own body and mind. Ever experienced any of these? Or is it just me? Any miseries from your own body and mind? Yes or yes? Okay. And then there's miseries from other living entities. Ever experience any misery from another living entity? Yes? A resounding yes. Okay. And then miseries from the devas, because like the tsunami came. These are presided, these big events, and the weather changes and all these heat and cold things are coming, being adjusted by the devas. So any miseries from there? A little bit, right? So these kleshas, she's jabbing us with that 3-prong. And really it's a reminder, it's Krishna's mercy, saying, don't stay here, you're not meant to be. It's like when someone's trying to wake you up, you know, you're having a bad dream, and they go, get up, you know. Durga's saying, get up, don't stay in here. And I'm going, no, I want to sleep some more. So she's jabbing us with that prong, the 3-prong instrument that she has. And that's the Devi Dham. Above Devi Dham is Mahesh Dham, as I mentioned, the abode of Mahesh, or Lord Shiva. Above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham. Hari Dham is Vaikuntha. That's a special realm where Krishna is worshipped with awe and reverence. Just like in South India. South India, you go to Udupi, and everyone's very reverent. They're worshipping the Lord with these very meterized prayers. And there's grandeur, the way they worship the Lord. And then above that is Goloka, which is Krishna's personal planet. Now, every rich person has their own island. You know that, right? What is his name? Peter Branson, who owns the Virgin Airlines. You ever heard of Virgin Airlines? It's owned by this man named Peter Branson. And he's a multi-billionaire, so he owns this airline. And so he bought himself an island. That's what you do when you have billions of dollars. You get yourself an island. Because you don't want to live like in, you know, around. You just get your own island and you fix it up so no one can bother you. You can just have your own friends and stuff. So Krishna, he has his own island. That's Goloka. That's the topmost planet that you see at the very top there, where you see Radha and Krishna. And that is shaped, as you can see, like a lotus flower. Sahastrapatra kamalam gokulakyam mahaparam tat karnikaram tadhama tadanantam shasambaram karnikaram mahatyantram shatkonam bhajrakilakam sharangam patitsanam prakitana pradespada. So these are described in the Shastra about exactly the shape and the size and what the planet of Goloka Vrindavan looks like. Now listen to this. Are you ready? All the Vaikuntha planets are expanding. They're always getting larger. And if you take all the Vaikuntha planets put together, and they're unlimited Vaikuntha planets, they don't equal the size of Goloka Vrindavan. And Goloka Vrindavan is always expanding. So the material world actually is just a little tiny, insignificant section, which is separated. It's like in California, near where I live, sometimes when we drive up north, there's a prison. It's sort of off in the corner. It's the San Quentin. It's a heavy prison. You drive by and you just barely notice it, and you say, oh yeah, there's the prison. There's all the prisoners in there, but the free people are driving around on the outside. So the material world is like a citadel. It's like a prison. It's just off in the corner of the spiritual world, actually. And it's an insignificant portion where the living entities who have rebelled against the Lord are living in the material world. But the spiritual world is unlimitedly large, and Krishna is there with his devotees, and there's an eternal festival going on there. Bhagavatam described there's airplanes in the spiritual world, but they're not for business trips. Pleasure trips only. In fact, they're flower airplanes. No briefcases, no dossiers to carry, no interviews to go to. It's only people are enjoying in the spiritual world, in the presence of the Supreme Person. And so, what does this all mean to us? I mean, it sounds very theoretical, and some of it, frankly, sounds fantastical. But these are all vivid descriptions, and I'm not doing them justice, honestly. I'm just telling you what's coming off the top of my head to the best of my recollection from my study of the Shastra. But there's an unlimited amount of variety in the spiritual world, and also this material world is called Martyaloka. It is the place of death. And Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, Yanti deva vrta devan, pitrin yantir pitir vrta, bhutani yanti bhuteja, yanti mam yajino pimam. You know what that means? Should I tell you? You can go wherever you like. You don't have to stay here. That's what it means. It means yanti. It means you can go where you like because you're a free soul, actually. Right now, we're trapped by our own ego and by our own desire to be attached to the material world. By our own desires, we're attached to the material world, which is not a desirable place in the scheme of things. But we're not obligated. And that's what Krishna's coming to tell us. By our own prerogative, we're staying in the material world, and Krishna's saying, you can go where you like. Please come back to Godhead. Just surrender to me, take the process of devotional service, and you can go back to God. In fact, he says you can go anywhere. Yanti deva brita devan. You can go live with the devas in the higher planetary system. That's available, but not recommended. Pitrin yanti pratirvita. There's a planet of the Pitris where there are the forefathers. They go there for some kind of rectification of their previous karmas and so forth. You can go live with the forefathers. Yanti devata devan pitrin yanti pratirvita. Bhutan yanti bhuteja. There's the various realms Krishna is describing that you can go and live in, if you like. You can go anywhere. But then he says, Yanti mam yajinopi mam. If you just worship me, you'll come to me. You'll come and live with me. So, we're in the material world. We're in Devidam. But we can easily transport ourselves from Devidam to Goloka Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes how to do that. But we've run out of time, so next time. Should I say how? Okay. Tan vistareta haya. He says that in this world, if you practice the process of hearing and chanting, it's like water, which he calls shravanadi jala. So shravanadi means shravana, adi means hearing and chanting and all the processes of devotional service. It's jala. Any Bengali speakers in here? Who speaks Bengali? Not even one person? He's saying Gayatri. He can't even move a muscle or raise his hand. So, this jal means water. So when you hear and chant, you take the time to chant, what you're doing, you water the seed of devotional service in your heart. So describe how a spiritual master plants the seed of devotion in your heart, and then you water it. It's your job to water it. You have to be a good gardener. So you water it with that hearing and chanting, then the seed will sprout in your heart and it will grow. And Mahaprabhu says, how far does it grow? It grows through the coverings of the material universe. And that's billions and billions of miles. It grows through that covering. It goes all the way through the Vaikuntha planets and it goes to Goloka Vrindavan. And you know how a creeper, like a jasmine bush, it likes to grab onto things. You ever watch those? They find a post and they go like this. It's so interesting, isn't it? So the creeper of devotional service, it goes to Goloka and then it finds Krishna's lotus feet and it circles around his feet, grabs on like that. And so what happens is, while you're living here in Tokyo, in the material world, in Devidam, by the process of hearing and chanting, you actually have dual citizenship. You'll live in the spiritual world, but at the same time while you're living here. And then Mahaprabhu says you must go on with the process of watering. Then, when you leave this body, and many places Krishna describes what happens when you leave behind this body. Now, a couple of them. Eighth chapter, he says, Antakali chamameva smaran mukva kalevaram yapriyati tajan pavam nati yashyata shamshaya. What, if you're thinking of Krishna at the time of death, when you leave this body, then you'll go to Krishna. Then he says, yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kontiya sadata bhava bhavita. Whatever you're thinking of at the time of death, whatever your bhava, whatever your feeling is, and that's all you're left with at the time of death, your feeling that you've accumulated through this lifetime, that you will attain without fail. So where we go is a product of our consciousness at the time of death. And so one must practice yoga, the yoga of remembering Krishna during this lifetime. Manmana bhavamad bhakto. Krishna says, just think of me, always think of me. And you can do that best by practicing vidhi bhakti, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavad Gita, doing seva in association of devotees. The more you do that, the more you'll develop attachment to it, and the more you'll develop this feeling or bhav for Krishna. And Krishna says, janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvata tatva deham punarjanma naiti mameti soarjuna. That one who knows me in truth through the process of hearing and chanting and through a devotional service in this lifetime, when he leaves the body, tyakva deham, he gives up the body, that he doesn't take birth again in the material world, but goes back to the spiritual world. Guaranteed. So those who understand this map of the material world, they know where we are. They don't get settled in here and start thinking, this is my home. First of all, there's a difference between a materialist and a transcendentalist. And here's what it is. The materialist thinks, I'm going to live forever. Or if I do die, it's somewhat millions of years in the future. I don't even want to think about it. This is material consciousness. A transcendentalist thinks, I can die at any second. Now, which is reality? A, I'm going to live forever. B, I could die at any second. Okay, let's vote. All those who'd like to vote for A being reality, raise your hand. Okay, B, we can die at any second. Raise your hand. Okay, you're all transcendentalists. So transcendentalist means you're only using this life as a transfer. It's just a stopover. You're just stopping over in this one body. You understand that you're within this framework. You're in the map. You're on an earthly planet, which is actually the ideal place from which to transfer yourself back to the spiritual world. So you see this lifetime as a transfer process. And therefore, you engage in devotional service and ready yourself for that inevitable change that will take place when you give up this body and go back to Krishna. Now we'll take a few more comments and questions. What did you hear so far that's stuck in your mind that you want to mention? That when you walk out of here today, and one of your friends grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? You're going to say? The one thing you'll tell him is? Yes, let's hear. We got more discussions going on. Hold that close to your mouth and make sure it's on.
Hello?
It's not on. Saptarishi, we have our technical team on. There we go. Okay.
Why we can go only from Earth planet to spiritual world?
Because there's a special corridor from Goloka Vrindavan, from Gokula Vrindavan to Goloka Vrindavan. It's like an embassy. Like if you go to, say, Iran, and then you get in trouble, you lose your passport or something like that, you're going to go to, depends what country you're from, but I'd go to the American embassy. Assuming they still have one. I'd go to the American embassy. You know, it's really interesting. One time I was in Calcutta, and I went to the American embassy for some reason. And when I got there, I'd been in Calcutta a long time, and I was there for a long time. So then I went to the embassy in Calcutta, the American embassy. And when I walked inside, I saw that there were U.S. Marines right inside. Americans. Red-blooded Americans. And then they had American water inside. They had brought it from America. And everything inside, all the snacks and everything they had in there was from America. And it's like, you walk in and it's not like they have, you know, Indian products inside. The whole place is American. There's Americans working there. They have American food. They have American air inside. It's an embassy. So in this planet, this Gokula Vrindavan is an embassy for the Goloka Vrindavan. They're actually non-different according to Shastra. And by cultivating devotional service in Gokula Vrindavan, then one can actually transfer oneself very easily to Goloka Vrindavan. But Earth is a special place. It has a special opportunity. It's not too hellish, and it's not too heavenly. It's right in the middle. Like you can see hellish things in this world, right? And you can also see heavenly things here, too. So it's not too nice, because in the heavenly planets, you know, imagine if someone told you you had a billion years to live. Would you put off a few things? Would you procrastinate? Come be honest now. You have a billion years to live, and your senses are much stronger than what you have here. You can enjoy much higher kinds of pleasure there. You know, you have more facility. it's hard for people who have lots and lots of material facility to actually take serious the spiritual life oftentimes, because they're really absorbed in what they have right now. So in the heavenly planets, it's not so easy. In the hellish planets, it's a kind of a reformation. You're really being tortured in a way in the lower planetary system, so it's hard to concentrate on spiritual life. But the Earth planet is the place for transfer. It's right in the middle, and it's specifically designed for performing yajna. So it's a very good place. And the Earth is blessed also. It was picked up by Varahadev. When it fell off the balance and went into the Garbhodaksha ocean, Varahadev picked it up and put it back. So it was touched by Krishna. It's a very blessed place. Don't ask how we got so lucky, because we're just here. I mean, it's a fact. And it is what the Shastras say. Take advantage of it. That's the main thing. Earthly planet. What else did you hear? One thing that stuck in your mind. Some of those who haven't offered anything yet, tell us something, what you've heard so far that stuck in your mind, or a question. We'll take three. There you go.
So, to reach Krishna, one method is by chanting, you can get closer to Krishna.
Yeah.
And you said there are so many lokas where rishis stay. Is it that rishis once go there, they are there, and they can't reach Krishna?
No, they can go. They can go.
There also there have to be, like, yeah, as pious as they lived in, on earth.
Yeah, nothing's exactly stereotyped. Mm-hmm. I mean, Krishna's creation is unlimitedly variegated, and there are many different opportunities. Opportunity for the free soul. Krishna has given us freedom to live wherever you want and to go wherever you want. It's available. Those who have become elevated through the process of devotional service to reestablish their relationship with Krishna generally don't go anywhere else, because they're completely satisfied. When one reestablishes one's eternal relationship with Krishna, which is the goal of bhakti, and that's reawakened, whatever rasa that is, the devotee feels completely satisfied. Even he or she may realize that there are other kinds of rasas, and may see, you know, that some of them are considered even to be more intimate with Krishna. They're happy. Hanuman's happy in Dasya Ras. That is, he's happy being a servant of Krishna. He's not going to trade it for anything. And others that are in friendship with Krishna, they're completely satisfied like that. In the upper planetary system, there are rishis, and some of them are become enamored of their unlimited powers and things like that. And some of them are more inclined to other kinds of processes of meditation and things like that. And therefore, Krishna provides all kinds of realms for them. Interesting also, descriptions in the Bhagavatam about different ways that living entities leave the material world and go back to Godhead. Some living entities, they take the scenic route. They actually want to see everything as they go out. And this is described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, how some souls, when they're being liberated from the material world, they actually go through the Shishumar and through the upper planetary systems, and they take a look at all of God's creation as they're leaving. And they kind of observe everything on their way out. Others, they go in a more direct route. So, yes. Oh, so we're finished, huh? Keep going? The silent arti? Okay. Did that answer your question? Or was it? Should I be more precise?
All the locals, it's a different kind of people.
Yes.
Is it that they stay there or they reach the Supreme Lord?
No, from any position you can improve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially in the material world, any position you can move up and improve. Jai Shri Shri Ramakrishna Ki Jai. So, this is Krishna's instruction. He tells Arjuna, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartino Arjuna, Mamupita Punar Janma, that from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. He said, but those who reach my supreme planet don't take birth again in this material world. So really, we should endeavor to get out of the material world, go back to the spiritual world. Don't linger here. Because one thing is, the human body is very rare. This is stated in many places. Nridehama jam sulabam sudulabam plavam sukalpam guru karnadaram mayana kulyena tabasvateritam pumam virajeta pumam dashikna. The Bhagavatam, Krishna says the human body is called Nrideham. This is Nri, means human, right? Nrideham, that it is a plavam, it's a boat. And this Nrideham, it is equipped to cross over the material ocean. But with like any boat, what you need, first you have to have a captain, the captain's spiritual master. So all the Shastras say, get yourself a spiritual master. Like if you're going to go across the ocean, don't try to go by yourself because you're going to drown. So a captain means somebody who's been across. They understand how the waves work and how storms come and all kinds of things, and they can guide you across. And then he says you need favorable breezes. And the favorable breezes are the instructions from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And so your boat, this human body, can take you all the way across. If you take advantage of these breezes and you have a captain, you can go across. Labvam sudurlabam idam bhagasambhavante manusha martadam anityama apihadira. So then a Shastra also says, it's very, very rare to get a human body. Labvam sudurlabam. Sudurlabam means very rare. Out of 8,400,000 species that we see all around us, the human body is very, very rarely gotten. And you get it like you win the lottery. Through the course of moving through all these species of life, you come to the human form of life. And it has one specific purpose, and that is to attain perfection, to inquire about the Supreme, to practice some process of spiritual life, and elevate oneself out of the material world. Actually, to develop love for God. That's the main purpose. So yes, from any position you can do that. Okay, a couple more. Let's have discussion. This is really like the process of spiritual life, to discuss thoroughly threadbare. Ask at some, bring up a doubt you have, or say something that's stuck in your mind that sounded like it works for you. Yes.
Like those who worship demigods, they go to demigods' planets. Those who worship Krishna, they can go to Krishna's planets.
Yanti Deva, Prata Deva. So Krishna says you worship the Devas, you go to the Devas. Pitran Yanti Pratir Prata. If you go, you worship the Pitris, you go to the Pitris. If you worship me, Krishna says, you'll come to me. So the Devas are also living entities, they're jivas, but they're empowered to do certain functions in the material world. And they're in the mode of goodness, they're sattva-gun. But they're also conditioned by the material world. They can offer only so much in this, that has to do with the material world. And so Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita that everything the Devas are giving you is coming from me anyway, so why are you worshipping the Devas? He says that if you're worshipping the Devas and they're giving you something, not only am I supplying the Devas the things that you're getting, but also the faith that you have in the Devas, I'm giving you that faith within your heart. So a person who comes to a mature understanding, Krishna says, which he describes in the 7th chapter, thus, bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mam prapadyate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, one who comes to perfect knowledge surrenders to me. It's every microphone in the whole world does this. If someone wants to make a lot of money, you can invent a microphone that doesn't do this. But don't do that. Just take to bhakti, because even if you make a microphone, sooner or later it's going to be destroyed. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita doesn't recommend worship of the devas. If you worship Krishna, you're automatically worshiping the devas, because the devas are like leaves on a tree and Krishna's the root. So if you water the root, then the leaves automatically are taken care of. If you want to worship the devas, the best way to worship the devas is to give them Krishna prasad, because that's what they're after anyway. So if you have an attachment for the devas, you do your Vishnu worship. And then when you get the prasad, you have the devas facing your Vishnu deity. And then you say, here, take the prasad, and then they'll be satisfied. That's okay. And also it's okay to pray to the devas that you can become a better servant of Krishna. This Rukmini did, this the gopis did, and this is not illegal. What's illegal is thinking devas, Krishna, it's all the same. What's the difference? They're all the same. This is a kind of a mishmash. This is a concoction. It's nowhere in Shastra. It's not in the Bhagavad Gita, definitely. It's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam. People just make things up. And then it gets propagated as spiritual science. And so this worship of devas saying, you know, whatever you worship, whatever form you worship, it's all the same, because it's all God. God's just one. And also, you know, you end up as merging into God anyway. You become God. These are concocted ideas that people have propagated over time. And they get spread and people pick them up. So to clarify our intelligence, we have to follow a standard process. And Bhagavad Gita is it. It's the book that all the acharyas, every acharya who's appeared in South India and propagated the science of spiritual knowledge accepts Bhagavad Gita. So if you don't accept Bhagavad Gita, you're really not in the game. And if you accept Bhagavad Gita, you read it carefully, you understand. Krishna says very clearly many of these things. Oftentimes, Prabhupada, when he was discussing with people and they would bring up concocted ideas and they say, oh, you know, worshipping God's a mystery. Prabhupada says, it's not a mystery. It's right there in the Bhagavad Gita. It's an open secret. Of course, Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam. It's secret because people don't listen. Millions of people have Bhagavad Gita, but how many of them actually read the Bhagavad Gita? In Tokyo, there are many, many thousands of people have the Bhagavad Gita. How many of them read the Bhagavad Gita carefully and actually enter into the science? And of those who read the Bhagavad Gita, how many of them follow what it says in the Bhagavad Gita? That's the real key. A little simple devotion to the principles of the Bhagavad Gita and your life completely changes. But Krishna never recommends worship the devas in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, there is, in the Vedas, there are sections which say, this particular deva is supreme, or you should worship such and such a deva because that's the supreme of all supreme. There are shastras like that. And those are bona fide shastras. But you have to understand the overall scheme of the Vedas. What are they? It's a huge project. It's meant to elevate people from every condition of life to a higher position. So now, why in the Vedas, the bona fide Vedas, does it say Durga is the supreme, worship Durga? Because some people are conditioned by lower modes of material nature, and they're very attached to worship in a certain mode. And therefore, the Vedas give you a direction, not you. They give somebody a direction that you eat meat. Now, eating meat's not a good idea, because you're going to get karma for it, heavy karma. But in the Vedas, it'll say, eat meat, but first offer it to Durga during a dark moon night and say this mantra into the ear of the goat before you kill it. And that is, I'm killing you now, but next life you're going to kill me as a payback. And you offer that, you know, yajna to Durga, bona fide in the Vedas. Why? Because when somebody starts wherever they are, they begin to regulate their activity by following the Veda, and then they get the result, they start to develop faith in it. And gradually, by that faith, through the process, they develop a propensity to follow the authority of the Vedas, and they come to a higher and higher level. But if you want to save a lot of time, you take the Bhagavad Gita, because it's the Gita Upanishad. It's the summarization of all the Upanishads, which are a summarization of the Vedas, basically. And Krishna spoke it personally. And if you take the instructions, the simple instruction Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, then you can very quickly make advancement to the highest goal of life. Two more points. Yes.
You said that in the Vaikuntha.
Here comes the microphone.
In the Vaikuntha Loka, there are devotees residing
on each planet.
On each planet.
Yes.
And I would like to know, in the Karana ocean, where we have different universes. When Vishnu brings out, a lot of universes are there. So what is the function of those, and who resides there?
The function of what?
The function of these universes which are around in the Karna Ocean.
Those universes are where we are. For instance, we're in a universe. And within each universe, which is its own unit, there are higher and lower planetary systems. There's an earthly region, the middle region, the earthly planet. So each one of those little bubbles that comes out from the pores of Mahavishnu is actually an individual universe. And there's trillions and unlimited universes that emanate from his pores. So those, each one of them, which is described, if you ever see a cluster of bubbles all together, and you see millions and millions of bubbles, is like the universes. Each one of them is a little round unit like that. Like a little oval, actually, almost like a football. And, round. It's more like a European football. Round. And inside that, that's enclosed with the different layers. Each one of the universe has these various layers, which you can see in those different colors, those colored bands. That's showing the different coverings of the universe. And then within each universe, there are the various planetary systems. So each one of these is expanded into this blown-up form. And these are all emanating, the universes that are emanating from the Mahavishnu. Then within each one of these, the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is the next expansion of the Lord, who lies on, he fills up half of that universe with the perspiration from his own body. And that's called the Garbhadaka Ocean. This is the Karna Ocean, and within each individual universe, there's the Garbhadaka Ocean. And on that, the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he's floating on Anantashesh. Then from his navel, you'll see the navel, from the navel stem comes the lotus flower, and then Prama is born from the lotus. And then Brahma is empowered by the Lord to create all the different planetary systems. And you'll notice in the Bhagavatam, it gives a summary of how he created everything by mantra. He has these powerful mantras, and then he creates all the different forms in the material world. And so, science, they try to figure out, they try to deconstruct the universe, and they come up with all these theories about evolution. So one of the theories is because you find in the arm of a man and in the wing of a bird a kind of a similar structure. They say, well, it must have evolved somehow. First of all, that kind of evolution has been proved to be impossible mathematically. There's a detailed explanation of this given by Sadaputta, who is a brilliant scientist devotee, passed away unfortunately, but he left behind him a series of lectures describing mathematically the improbability of evolution. That is, an improvement based on mutation, which is part of the idea of the evolutionary theory, that living organisms, which actually evolve out of matter, improve themselves by natural selection. And that is that they have a mutation, and that mutation is superior to the other forms that already live, that are already existing, and therefore it adapts and it actually becomes prominent, and that's what creates all the variety of the universe. It's improbable, impossible mathematically, given certain periods of time, that people say evolution has taken place. And he explains it very eloquently because he's a mathematician. Be that as it may, he presents that any engineer who creates something uses the same scheme when he designs other kinds of mechanisms. For instance, when somebody reinvents a car, they're going to use, like now electric cars are coming out. It doesn't mean they don't have wheels. It doesn't mean they don't have a chassis and other kinds of things. They just have a slightly different engine. So similarly, the wing of a bird, the arm of a man, all these things have very similar structure because there's one engineer. There's an engineer in the universe, and to say, oh, it seems implausible because I'm thinking in terms of my own very limited sphere of experience, which Prabhupada described many times as Dr. Frog. And Dr. Frog is, there's a frog living in a well in the middle of a field. And he thinks, this is the universe, my well. There's nothing bigger than this. And then one day, one of the frogs from the well catches a ride in a bullock cart, and it takes him all the way down to the Pacific Ocean. And he gets to look at the Pacific Ocean, and he sees this huge, gigantic body of water, and then he comes back and he jumps back in the well. And he says, I've seen the biggest well in the universe. It's amazing. It's bigger than this. And then Dr. Frog comes over, impossible, there's nothing bigger than this. And he says, how much bigger? Twice as big? And as he's speaking, he's puffing himself up like frogs do. And then the other says, no, it's way bigger than twice as big. He says, okay, four times as big? And he goes, no, it's millions of times, impossible. And the Dr. Frog explodes himself trying to think about something that's bigger than his little well. So trying to understand the universe by one's ascending knowledge, that is trying to capture it through the senses or the intellect, is impossible. But we're taking all the knowledge which is descending, coming down through the Vedas, which is eternal spiritual knowledge that's passed down and gives all the details of the universe. And there are axiomatic truths given in the Vedas, which if one accepts and applies, then one can experience for oneself. It's actually scientific, because no one's expecting you to take it completely on faith. You must take some axiomatic truth when you take any science, because when you study any kind of science or discipline, you have to accept what the previous teachers have told you anyway. You can't go back and research everything yourself. You have to start somewhere. So in the Vedic process, we accept as axiomatic truth what's being passed down, and when you apply it, then you get complete realization for yourself. This is the process Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan, which means, first of all, what we're learning here is called Sambandha Gyan, knowledge of our relationship with the universe and with Krishna, and we want to know where we are and how to make progress. And once we know that, we're all progressive, then we start to move towards that. Once you believe it and understand it, then you can actually move. Nice point. One more. One thing you heard, you're ready, yes. Who is the Supreme? Well, here I'm pointing out that Krishna is in the Goloka Vrindavan planet as the Supreme. Mahavishnu and Krishna are the same. Now I'll give you an example. Srikant Prabhu just came in and he's wearing a suit. Please notice. Just have a look. He's wearing a suit. He just, I'm assuming, came coming from work, right? Is that true? Let's ask his wife, does he always wear a suit at home?
No.
Sometimes a t-shirt or something like that? Okay, is he still Shrikant when he wears a t-shirt? Yes? Right. So sometimes he wears a t-shirt around the house. And sometimes when he goes to work, he puts on, you know, nice jacket, carries a briefcase, whatever. So Krishna and Mahavishnu, same. Only Mahavishnu is wearing his work clothes, basically. Because he's got the Srishti Lila. He's creating the universe. He's a different function. But one, Krishna is one. There's no difference between Krishna and Mahavishnu. Just difference in their activity, in their mood. So Krishna is known as Akila Rasamrita Sindhu. He's the source of all the rasas. What we're all looking for is love. So Krishna is the supreme lover. He's the source of all relationships that we're actually looking for. So in his mood of Krishna, God is in this a casual mood at home. He's at home with his loved ones. God has many names, right? Unlimited names, just like we have many names. You have many names? Well, you have at least two, a family name and a given name, right? Do you have any nicknames? You don't have to tell us, but just tell me if you do have a nickname. Anybody here have a nickname? I have a nickname. I mean, you know, even now, amongst devotees, people call me different things according to my relationship with them. Like Satyadeva Prabhu and I are really close friends, so we have nicknames for each other. And just, it's natural. When you have a friend, you don't just, you don't call them by their formal name, right? If you're very close to somebody, you call them something very intimate. Or you shorten their name. So God has many names according to his relationships with his devotees. So when he's working in the material world, he's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he's called Paramatma, he's called Jagadishwar, because it relates to his lila of creating the material world and destroying the material world. But when you start getting into the higher realms, especially you go into Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's names get a lot sweeter because they're more intimate. Yashodanandan. Yashodanandan means he's the son of Yashoda. Now, if you're walking in a distant country somewhere and somebody comes out and calls you by your nickname, you're going to turn around really fast and go, "How did you know that?" You know. So, in the science of Harinam, we're singing these names of God that are very intimate. They're from the higher realm. We sing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. These are names of Krishna, very personal names, and this is the way to come closer to God in the highest realm. So, same God, different moods. Because there's only one God. But he expands himself in various ways according to his relationship with his pastimes and with his devotees. Does that help? And you'll find a different, very different mood you go to a South Indian temple than if you go to a Vrindavan temple. Very different mood. Because, you know, they're all devotees. But they're just worshipping in a slightly different mood. Vrindavan mood is very, like, intimate, casual. And in South India, Sahasra Krishna Purusa Sahasra Tathasrapad Sabhumim Vishrato Vritvarata Tishtata Shangulam. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the author is describing why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. The reason he came was to describe the most intimate pastimes with Krishna in the highest realm, which most people don't know about so much. They know about God as this in grandeur, but they don't know that in the spiritual world, Krishna, he has these relationships with wives and consorts. And when they approach him in a sulky mood and they berate him and they say, "I don't want to talk to you today," Krishna appreciates that more than the hymns of the Vedas, says the Shastra. It's a kind of intimate relationship, you know, with Krishna. So that's what we're talking about, Goloka Vrindavan. God when he's with his most intimate devotees and things. And you can go to that place by worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's what he came to give, the highest ras in the spiritual world. And by serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then you naturally develop that kind of love. for Krishna and Goloka. But we worship all the forms of Krishna. And the highest devotees, the gopis, they consider all the other devotees in Vaikuntha higher than them. That's the mood of the gopis, or the highest devotees. They always consider all the other devotees are doing more service than me. The mood of utter humility called dainya. No one's thinking, oh, I'm the best devotee, those other guys are down there, they're small fries. That okay? Alright. Any last point? We're very lucky here, we have Radha Govinda. These deities have appeared here in the middle of one of the most materialistic cities in the world, if not the most materialistic city. And that's the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, who have prayed for him and then, you know, asked him to come, asked Radha Govinda to come here. So we should tell everybody. This is a special thing. And it's not we're just sentimental. And as I say today, I just gave a summary study of this, but it's all available in all these books, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have all these scriptures to back it up. And anyone who makes a study of it will begin to develop a firm faith that this is actually an accurate description of what is the universe. And if you add into that a little bit of hearing from some of these devotee scientists who can explain from the point of view of mathematics and physics and all the theories of evolution and everything like that and debunk all those things, it will make you very strong in devotional service. Because there's so much propaganda about religion is just mythology, all these things. Yeah, sure, there's talking snakes somewhere and everything. Some people say like this. But you have to do your own research and find out, actually. This is Dr. Frog philosophy, this idea that only what I can see, I can believe here in this particular realm. This is due to a very crippled and limited kind of vision. But the Vedas open us to the whole world of understanding Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, all the material worlds, and we should know all these things. That's what the human brain is meant for, this kind of research. Nowadays we're using the human brain to figure out how to make a train go 600 miles an hour. But what difference does it make if you get to Osaka 2 hours earlier than you did before? You're still going to talk about the same stuff you were. But if you're going to study this, then you actually can enter into the spiritual realm. And you can realize it yourself within your own heart. Krishna reveals it within the heart through the process of bhakti. So we've come to an end of 2 hours of hearing and chanting. I congratulate you. And go on with this satsangs that you're having. These are very powerful. You should do them as regularly as possible. Come together to hear and chant. And then expand it. Bring in more people and start franchising all over Tokyo. That's what people need. Just look out the window and notice how people are bored going to work. And what do they have to relieve their stress? To go shopping, smoke a cigarette, have some alcohol or something like that. It's actually a very hellish kind of existence. But satsang, it actually wakes up the soul, makes you happy. So you're deputized. You must carry this on and spread it as much as you can all over Tokyo. Hare Krishna. Go pray manande, anigo, shishi rade govindaji ki jai, shishi nitai gaur sundar ki jai, shishi lakshmi nishingadev ki jai, gaur bhaktarindu ki jai, go pray manande.